I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. Today, we've got managing editor Vanessa.
Hello.
Writer Flora.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's monthly science and nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week, we'll find out how insects could soon start filming their friends, why we all like a nice round number, and we will also be talking about the return of the UK's art galleries. Plus, we'll have a debate all about billionaires. But before all of that, seeing as we will be talking about numbers, I want to know, simple question, what is everyone's favourite number and, crucially, why? Vanessa, you can go first.
Well, this is a bit of a tricky one. I'd never realised. There was a bit of a toss-up between 21, which is the date of my birthday, and 26. But I think it's 26 because I just like the shape of it.
What a lovely answer. Flora, how about you?
I like the number 7. I've always liked the number 7. I think I was told as a child that it's the number of perfection. And I remember 7 being a very happy age to be.
The number of perfection. That is poetry. Beautiful. Kieran, how about you?
I've always had a particular affinity with 13, and it was my grandma's favourite number as well, and I think we both like the fact that it's thought to be unlucky, so we decide to make our own lucky number.
Also, I think Taylor Swift's favourite number, so you're in good company. My favourite is the really boring standard. Mine is 16, because that is the day of my birthday. That is the day I always pick, the number I always pick if I have to ask a favourite number, so pretty standard, I guess. We also want to find out, what is your favourite fact from this week? Vanessa, what have you found out about?
Well, this is a fact very close to my heart. People working from home in lockdown have spent an extra £24 million on coffee and tea, apparently, and £19 million on biscuits. And that's just people in Britain, so goodness knows what's happening worldwide.
I think half of that is just me, to be honest. So yeah, I can entirely believe that. Flora, what have you been finding out about?
Well, my fact is not entirely unrelated to Vanessa's, although not from the same story. And it's that people in Britain, so to tackle obesity, doctors are being encouraged to prescribe cycling and walking to people who are very overweight. And I think this is quite a cool fact, because I sort of think it's just a proactive, good way to try to tackle the problem.
And all of those biscuits we've been eating as well.
And all those biscuits.
Kieran, how about you?
Sticking with the sports theme, I learnt this week about the Chameleon Olympics, which are taking place in South Africa, and it's scientists who are hoping to determine which species of chameleon are the best at walking along rods, it's a very narrow category, which have the strongest bite, and which have the best camouflage. But of course, the judges will find that last one very difficult to judge, because they'll all have disappeared.
Oh my goodness, I hope they live stream the Chameleon Olympics, because I will be watching that. That'll be amazing. Right now it's time for Real or Rubbish. So Kieran, tell me your story this week and I will try and guess whether it is real or rubbish.
This week's Real or Rubbish story is all about some medieval knights on horseback who are protecting a Swedish island from the invasion of COVID-19, which is the disease caused by the coronavirus. So this is the island of Gotland, and it's got beautiful beaches, it's got a medieval town, and it's a very popular place for tourists to go. And so to try and make sure that the disease doesn't spread too much in Gotland, the so-called COVID knights have been employed to ride around popular tourist areas with different signs that say, keep your distance, or stay at home if you've got symptoms, as part of an effort to keep the disease at bay.
Right, I'm going to have to just recap this, just to double check I've got it. So this area, they've employed people dressed up as knights to have signs to tell people to be safe. Is that's it, right?
I think that diminishes it a little bit, because I think they are knights. They're not people dressed up as knights. But yes,
no, fair enough.
That is okay. Correct.
So, knights seems like an odd choice. Like, why not robots? Why not giant teddy bears? Like, that's just as fun.
That is just as fun. I suppose the connection that you might make is that it's it is in a medieval town, so a robot might look a little out of place. Whereas a knight fits right in.
I don't know, not in the medieval times that I imagine in my head, robots and teddy bears everywhere. This seems ridiculous, because I just... Oh, man. But then you catch me out every week. I change my mind and it's wrong. Oh, man. All right. Last week, in particular, you absolutely... you pulled the wool over my eyes and now I can never trust anyone ever again. So I'll have to have a think about this one. If you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show and we can all find out the answer together. So now it's time for our three favourite stories from this week. Flora, tell me, what is going on?
Well, my favourite story from this week is all about what's called a beetle can. So this is a tiny, teeny camera that scientists have created, and it's small enough to fix onto a beetle's back. It weighs around 1/10 of a playing card, which is 250 milligrams, so very, very light. And it's sort of used to see where the beetles go and, I guess, to sort of see the world from the beetle's perspective. We mentioned at the beginning, you know, so you can see a beetle's friends. And they've got some great pictures of life as seen through a beetle's eyes. The footage is sent directly to a smartphone through Bluetooth. And to save battery, the camera only starts recording when the beetle starts moving. And it's important to note that it doesn't harm the beetles. And all the beetles who it was tested on live for a year after the experiment took place.
So no beetles were harmed in the making of the beetle
cam footage? No, they are all very happy.
This is really cool. I love the idea of seeing, I mean, I'm quite nosy anyway, so seeing anybody's life is quite interesting. Seeing the life of a beetle, which I can't relate to at all, that's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, very cool.
Vanessa, tell me about you. What have you been finding out about?
Well, I'm delighted to say that as restrictions are lifting, the UK's art galleries and museums are reopening. Not all of them are opening at the same time. Officially, the opening dates are, it was the 3rd of July in Northern Ireland, 4th of July in England, 15th in Scotland, and the 27th of July in Wales. So not all of them opened on that exact date because, in fact, some were a few weeks after the official date because they had to work out new rules because of the coronavirus and social distancing rules. So going to an art gallery is going to be a little bit different, I think, in future. You have to book a ticket for a particular time slot. You can't just wander in, which is true of some of the most popular exhibitions now anyway. You might also be asked to wear a face mask. And there might be a one-way system in place, so you don't have people kind of milling around. You have to follow the arrows on the floor. And you probably won't be allowed to leave things in the cloakroom, I would say. But on the plus side, it means that you can really enjoy your time, especially in art galleries or museums. I mean, I've been to exhibitions that were really popular and you sort of get borne along by the crowd. You can't stop. You can't see the exhibits properly. You can't read the little information cards. I'm not very tall, so this is a problem for me because people are in the way. So you have to sort of crane your neck all the time. And I think that it's really important that these places reopen because they remind us of what it is to be human, which I know sounds a bit philosophical and odd. But in museums, you sort of see and read stories about how humans have survived difficult situations. And in art galleries, you see paintings of scenes created during times of, say, food shortages or a war or when disease was rife. And you see that people made it through and they created beautiful things. And I think it's probably a really subtle thing. But I suspect that when I do go back to a gallery and spend what's now lovely, peaceful time, because there aren't as many people there, looking at how ingenious and creative and brilliant humans can be, I think it's going to comfort me at a really deep level.
I think that's a lovely thought, actually. Yeah, that's really lovely. Can I ask what your favourite art gallery is?
National Portrait Gallery in London. I absolutely love it. I think it's just, I just find people's faces really fascinating. So actually, yes, I hadn't thought about it. That's probably what I really miss about being in lockdown. I just don't see as many people. So yeah, maybe I should make the National Portrait Gallery my first stop.
Vanessa, that is my favourite one as well, because I love the history of all the people in there.
Well, I'm just nosy as well, so I just love reading about people.
I think we are cut from the very same cloth. And also, I guess, pretty good right now for our listeners, because school is out, so summer holidays are here, and more chance to go on trips and activities, I suppose.
Exactly, exactly, and learn some fascinating things.
And Kieran, tell me, what have you been finding out about?
Well, this story is a little bit different to what we might normally discuss. It comes from our science and technology page, and it's all about numbers and why people tend to prefer a certain kind of number over another, even if they're disadvantaged. So let me sort of explain that a little bit. So if you go into a shop and you fill up your shopping trolley with everything that you possibly want, and you get offered either a 91.27% discount on your basket or a 90% discount on your basket, most people will pick the 90%, even though it's the worst deal, because of course the higher number percent off means you get a bit, you know, you're paying less. And so this is a study that was done in a university in the US state of New York, where they looked at this very thing as to why do people prefer certain numbers, even if they would benefit more by picking a slightly less round number. And it really comes down to what people feel comfortable seeing. So if you see a round number like 90, you know straight away what that means. Whereas if it's got lots of digits involved and a decimal place and all that sort of stuff, it becomes a little bit more complicated. And the scientists involved in the study found that people felt quite uncomfortable around those complicated numbers, and so they were less likely to pick them over a much simpler number. And this sounds, you know, slightly frivolous, and, you know, it just affects maybe how shops offer their discounts and that sort of stuff, but it could actually come to play quite an important role during the coronavirus outbreak. And that's because numbers play an important role in how you communicate with somebody, and if we can understand how people respond to different numbers, then we know what numbers need to be used. So say, for example, sometime next year a vaccine is made, and that's a medicine that is injected into a person to prevent them from catching an illness. So let's say that vaccine for the coronavirus was found to work in, let's use the same number, 91.27% of cases. People would actually feel more convinced to get that vaccine if they were told that it worked 90% of the time, even though that's less of the time that it's proven to work, and it's slightly less accurate than the actual figure, but it would encourage more people to get it, or so say the people behind the study. So I thought it was very interesting that, numbers change how we think, and we feel much more comfortable with certain numbers.
I can understand it, though, because, I mean, well, first of all, I'm terrible at maths anyway. When you said round numbers, I thought you just meant, like, the number, like, 10 as opposed to number 7. But I think you are right, because it's if you've got a number with lots of points and decimals, like you say, it makes it more confusing. It just makes you think, oh, no, that's too much work. Whereas if you've got just a rounder number, it's simpler to understand and it's easy and it feels more accessible, I guess.
Absolutely. And if it's being used to help with public health messaging, then you want to go with the simple answer because you want people to understand it. So yeah, very, very, very interesting.
Also, to go back to your original point, if somebody offered me 90% off in the shop, I'd be like, yes, please, I am buying everything. That's amazing. Right, so now it's time to find out how your summer reading challenge is going. Do you guys have a little bit of an update for us?
Yes, we do. So this week we're going to play some clips of people who've already been getting in touch with their 3-word reviews of the 3 books they've read this summer. And as a reminder, you can find out more about the Summer of Reading Challenge at theweekjunior.co.uk/summer of reading. But here are some of those clips.
My name is Theo and I am 10 years old. The first book I'm reviewing is Head Kid by David Baddiel. The book was chaotic, crazy and fun. I have given it 2.5 stars. The second book I reviewed was The Rooftoppers by Catherine Rundle. It was an adventurous, flabbergasting and fun book. I give it 3 stars. The third book is Birthday Boy by David Baddiel. It was an amazing, exciting and adventurous book. I also give it 3 stars.
For a big debate, and this week we're asking whether there should be a limit on wealth. Who can tell me a little bit more?
The debate this week is inspired by the fact that on the 20th of July, Jeff Bezos, who's the founder of Amazon, made £10 billion in one day. So he earned that much money. And as a reminder, 10 billion is the same as 10,000 million, and it's written as a 1 followed by 10 zeros. Bezos is the world's richest man, and Amazon is a huge company which in 2019 employed nearly 800,000 people. In this debate, the word wealth is used to describe a large amount of money and valuable possessions. A lot of rich people choose to give away some of their wealth to charity, and sticking with Bezos, in 2018, it was reported that he had donated around £1.6 billion to good causes.
Right, okay, so this is going to be Flora versus Vanessa. So first up, I'm going to challenge Flora to say why she thinks there should be a limit on wealth. You've got 1 minute. When you're ready, take it away.
So My first question, I guess, is what would Jeff Bezos and other billionaires possibly use all that money for? Okay, we've said they give some to charity, but it's not really that much of a percentage of their overall wealth. So otherwise, they're just buying more Ferraris or what, another mansion with a wine cellar. It's far too much money for any one person to own, and I don't believe it can be good for anyone to be so rich. It makes people greedy and dissatisfied. J.D. Rockefeller, who is another extremely rich American businessman like Jeff Bezos, he died in 1937, but before that he was asked, how much is enough? And he replied, just a little bit more. And he also said, the only question with wealth is, what do you do with it? Which confirms my previous point. People should be rewarded for the work they do, but there could be some kind of limit so that people don't end up so much richer than others. And if there was a limit, any money that was left over could be used to build homes, schools, hospitals, and create jobs for people who really need them, and a fairer society for everyone.
Oh, lovely stuff, Flora. That was well-timed and also excellent Rockefeller quote in the middle there. So, Vanessa, you've got your work cut out for you here. Are you ready to go?
I am indeed, yes.
All right, well, take it away.
First off, I should say that I hate that some people are so rich, whereas other people live in slums. But how would we limit wealth? I'm going to get a bit into economics and politics here, but I think we can cope. Are we suggesting that we take away money that somebody has already made? That's very difficult, because having the right to own things is the basis of every stable society. When a country's fallen apart, say after a war, one of the first things you have to re-establish is property law. People have to feel that their belongings can't be taken away at any moment, otherwise everyone just carries on stealing and fighting. If you suddenly take away a big chunk of someone's property, then the whole society gets jittery. The other way would be through tax, but that doesn't work either. When you put up tax rates, you get more money in, but that doesn't last. Pretty soon it levels off and then it starts to go down. It's called the Laffer curve, if you want its proper name. People stop asking for pay rises because they'll just have to pay more tax. They don't work so hard because they feel there's no point, and rich people get very good at putting their money where it can't be taxed. So much as I hate it, I say you can't put a limit on wealth without attacking what holds our society together.
I mean, that was slightly over a minute, but Vanessa...
Oh, was it?
I will give you...
Oh, gosh.
You have penalties.
Well, yeah, it's penalties. Tempting. I mean, Flora, I did try to bring that in 1 week, but it did not go down very well. So I've had to be a lot more careful with that. Kieran, what do you reckon?
This is tricky, isn't it? I think I'm going to have to go with Vanessa, because I think the point that she made around how difficult it would actually be to do... Even if you think it is the right thing to do, I think it would be too difficult to do, and I think it would lead to lots more problems. So Vanessa gets my vote.
You see, Flora gets my vote because I think I know it's a hard thing to do and to figure out, but I feel like there should be a way, right? Flora convinced me. Sorry, Vanessa.
I get my vote because I cannot believe that I brought the Laffer curve into Junior podcast, I feel victorious.
Even having argued the other side, the Laffer curve did really convince me too.
To be fair, there were two very highbrow arguments today, so I think that is that's great for our listeners, though. They'll love it. So let us know what you think. Get in touch. Go and respond to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/poll, or email in your thoughts. Go and email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And if you do it with a video clip of you explaining which side of the debate you support, we might be able to play it out in next week's show. So last week on the podcast, we debated whether graffiti is art. In our poll, 69% of you said yes, it is, while 31% said no. And here's what some of you had to say.
On Apple Podcasts, Charlie, who's aged 11, argued, I think that graffiti is wrong. People can write really rude messages. However, I do like the work of artists like Banksy, but I think they should get permission from the town or city council before they do the art to make sure it's okay. James, aged 10, added, graffiti is art. Banksy is a true wonder of the world and his amazing work should not be ruined.
We also had a listener called Liar get in touch by email to say, I think that graffiti is art. But people sometimes use graffiti to portray bad language and other inappropriate things. However, when graffiti is done in the right way, graffiti is absolutely beautiful. It is art, she wrote in capital letters.
On Pop Jam, someone wrote, I think some graffiti should be considered art because sometimes it can be beautiful, but sometimes it is just pointless and silly. And someone else said, yes, it was art, so long as it's not just vandalism.
So remember, like I said, this is your chance to get involved. Grab a grown-up, record a video of you telling us what you think of this week's money debate and send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk and we could play it out on next week's show. All right then, now it's time to recap this real or rubbish story. Kieran, can you remind me what it was, please?
The story this week is that medieval knights on horseback are protecting a Swedish island this summer from the invasion of COVID-19, which is the disease caused by the coronavirus.
Well, I feel like knights have better things to do. I feel like, you know, they could be out, I don't know, galloping around in the woods. Is that better? Maybe it's not better. But I feel like it's a nice way to be reminded to social distance. If I see a knight on a horse telling me to step back, I'm probably more likely to do it. So I'm going to say true. I'm going to say it's real. Yeah, let's go for it. Why not?
Could I get a drum roll, please? It's real!
Finally!
Hooray! Yes, it is true. So the local authorities have hired knights from a local group that usually spend their summers reenacting medieval battles, but this year they will be fighting a different fight instead.
I mean, that feels like a big victory for me, Kieran, because after last week when I felt very fooled, I would say.
Betrayed.
Unfairly fooled. Betrayed, yeah, that's a better word for it. Yeah, betrayed by Michael. He knows what he did. That is great for me and great for the knights of this world. So thank you so much for that story. I guess that is it for the Week Junior Show this week. So goodbye to Vanessa.
Goodbye.
To Flora.
Goodbye.
And Kieran.
Goodbye.
Drop us a comment on Pop Jam at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk if you want to get in touch. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast from. Bye.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of The Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/The Week Junior and use the code PODCAST.